I want to start the session on time, so welcome to all of you. This, if you're here for enterprise solutions to copyright problems, this is not your solution. This is the digital storytelling session. I'm curious, can you hear me in the back? The mic is tethered, so I can't go very far, which I think is probably a subtle hint to the speaker, I'm not sure. I'm convening the session, and I'm presenting it. I thought about wearing a costume to convene, so I need to take off my coat. Welcome to the session. Brian Alexander will be here shortly. A few logistical notes. There's an evaluation online that you're supposed to fill out. I'm not sure where it is, but I'm sure you can find it. Power supplies. There are power outlets in the back. Some bright sparks have already seized those power outlets, so you can negotiate with them in whatever cultural method you see best fit to do. They're up there. There's also a little power strip right here in the front. So if you're brave, you can come sit in the front of a long cord, it'll be good. That's about it for power. So if you have problems with battery life, please cycle back to support. Third thing, I'm going to be showing you a lot of stuff, some which is online, on the web, some which is a PowerPoint stack. That's online right now via SlideShare, so you can play with that if you like. Fourth thing, I hope this will be interactive. I want you guys to be engaged. I've already passed out secretly coded handouts for the first assignment. If we have time, there'll be two more assignments depending on how we go. But if at any point, as we're hurtling along, you don't understand what's going on or you object violently, please throw up a hand or make a squeaking sound or something. And if I miss you, find someone nearby and you dealt with them. They'll cry out, they'll hear you, and it'll be good. All right, that's a convenient part. The session here, in case you came in during the music, you were listening to Gogol Bordello, the awesome band, via Pandora. And this is the session about teaching storytelling with Web 2.0 tools. We're going to be going at quite a clip here, so please feel free to save questions for the end if you think they're kind of larger or more conceptual. A bit of introduction. We're going to be going until 11:20. I'm Brian Alexander. I work for Knightly. Knightly is a nonprofit, the National Institute for Technology in Liberal Education. I'm the research director. I help Knightly do community development, professional development, focusing on emerging technologies. I research in a series of areas, including digital storytelling. I give talks, I give workshops, I publish, and just got a book contract for a book on new digital storytelling from Prager. So if you guys want, you are the first guinea pigs for this project. You're welcome. Now, also as we go, if you're curious about more stuff, again, this is all online. In the back on the table are a few copies of the EDUCAUSE Review, an article I co-wrote on this subject. It's a little old, but still has the basic idea. So if you want to carry that away, you can. Let's begin. I want to begin as crassly and cynically as possible. What can you exploit from this next 50 minutes? Well, if you are interested in making or helping somebody make a digital story, here are a few of the advantages. We're going to be showing you tools that are free or very low cost. We're going to be showing you some practical pedagogies and giving you the seeds for concepts that let you build still more pedagogies. And we're also going to be showing you a spectrum of types of projects, from the very small to the very large. So don't be intimidated by the big ones. Don't be unimpressed by the little ones. Some of this is style that you can apply. If you're in the back, you can't hide, I see you. Come grab a seat. There's some seats in the front. That's pretty good. Must be technology. Now, if you plan on doing no work whatsoever, that's okay. This is the slacker slide. If you are coming here thinking you're not going to be making a digital story, you're probably not going to help someone making a digital story, why am I here? Well, here are a few things you can do that require no work on your behalf. First, digital storytelling is increasing as the object of academic study. So you may see classes about digital storytelling or using it, but also you may see books and other media about this. A second thing is that there are just stories out there. So whatever you do, you're going to see more and more of these stories. And you should know, it's part of our cultural landscape. The third part is that the information landscape is already changing. News media, Hollywood, pay careful attention to this stuff, and they're trying to learn from it. So the stories that you consume are already beginning to morph slightly. And last, People are trying to make new tools for this kind of stuff every week. So you'll see new platforms. You might not use them for storytelling. You might use them for something else. But so you know, those tools are coming for a certain reason. Now, what is Web 2.0 storytelling? Characteristically, I won't define it that well, but give you a tag cloud. No, I'll do both. A tag cloud, you guys all should know what those are. This is generated by the tool called Wordle, wordle.net. If you haven't used it, use it. It's excellent. You can play this with your tag cloud. This simply refers to the intersection of Web 2.0 tools and media with storytelling. That's the idea. Now, Web 2.0 is famously hard to define, but we all know what it is. We can talk about micro-content. We could talk about social software. We could talk about Web 2.0 always being in beta, always morphing, always undergoing feature transformations. We can talk about Web 2.0 being social in terms of multiply authored micro-content. We can also talk about Web 2.0 as a field where the boundaries are hard to define. When I introduce Web 2.0 to people, I normally take their picture. Actually, I don't. But I do get faculty who will ask me, so where do I download Web 2.0? They're quite serious. They can't see a boundary. What they want Steve Jobs to sell to them is iWeb 2.0. There's no real boundary around Web 2.0. Your browser doesn't make a special chime when you land on the pages, but we get the idea. By the way, these images, this is a chart, a little bit out of date already, using a tool called Gliffy, G-L-I-F-F-Y. If you have a hard time drawing, this is a fabulous service. You can draw charts like this. If you don't recognize this picture, every journalist does. This is a picture of that plane crash landing in the Hudson where a Twitter picture scooped the New York Times. Every journalist knows this picture. Now, here's the hard part. What is storytelling? Now, just for pedagogically, you should know, this is a terrific exercise that I'm not going to have you do, but it works for almost anybody to ask them, well, what is storytelling? What makes a good story? What makes a bad story? That's a very, very productive thing. Storytelling as a whole, the concept tends to mobilize every audience, regardless of age, regardless of region or technological sophistication. But instead, I can give you a few ways into this because we're short on time. Here's one. You might recognize this opening line. The last man on earth sat alone in a room. There was a knock at the door. It's one of the most parodied opening lines in the history of American science fiction. It's from Fred Brown's story called Knock. And the parodies have things like, it was the last woman, or it was a Martian, or the knock was very tall. You could do a lot with it. But that little moment, that little spark gap, that little perhaps frisson that you feel leads you on. Please come. It's okay. You're all from Britain. I can embarrass you. Have a seat in the front if you like. There are also seats over here as well. There is no power supply in the middle, though. That sense of mystery draws you on a bit. One of the key problems in defining digital storytelling is saying, how is it different from, say, a very dull PowerPoint presentation? And one of the ways is a little bit of mystery that pulls you to the next slide. Think about it. Some of the great opening moments in stories have that sense of mystery. It was a bright, cold day in April. The clocks were striking 13. Anyone recognize that? 1984. Opening line. And already gives you a chill in all kinds of ways. Last night I dreamt I went to Mandalay again. Well, the women here know this story, the first line of Rebecca. Fabulous film, too. You know the third one. The fourth one you might not know. The sky above the port was the color of a television tuned to a dead channel. It's the opening line of Neuromancer, William Gibson's 1984 novel that more or less kicked off cyberpunk. All of these give you a little chill, a little mystery that pulls you forward. Think about that as one way of stories. Here's the classic way. This is about 150 years old. Everyone knows this, the Freytag Triangle. Opening action, rising action, big thing goes on, denouement. It's pretty classic. There's already movies that make fun of this triangle and use it to tell a story. This is pretty popular. The Center for Digital Storytelling, which I'll explicate in a little bit, has a different model. They suggest that stories tend to be about something important that happens to a person. It could be about a person that's important in somebody else's life. It could be about a very important event that happens. If you three in the back don't want to stand up anymore, there are seats in the middle and towards the front, if you like. Or you could just stay there in frozen panic as well. That's also good. this image here on the right, I'm not sure if you can make this out. This is a parody of the Bill Gates homepage Facebook. Bill Gates just bought Azerbaijan, you know, and Steve Jobs makes fun of his operating system, that kind of thing. But the personal is often a deep hook for a story. Now, what I'd like you to do, those of you who have a piece of paper, a white piece of paper, some of you are looking at it, I know, trying to see if the font was just really small. No, it's blank. I would like you to take out a pen. I'd like you to take the next 2 minutes and turn to your neighbors, who might not have that sheet of paper, and discuss this question. What is not storytelling? What isn't a story? 2 minutes. Go. What is not storytelling? You guys in the far back there, what did you think?
A dictionary.
Yes, there is actually, there are several dictionary stories. A Serbian writer named Pavic has one called Dictionary of the Khazars, but usually, yes, that works. All the way in the far back there, what did you guys think? We didn't think anything, we're hiding. No, what? Oh, you were practicing the answer. I see. You in the front, what did you guys think?
We had a series of disconnected images or ideas, lack of personal like engagement or theme.
Okay, their answer was a series of disconnected images and ideas. Second one again?
Lack of personal engagement or theme.
In other words, a bit like this presentation, yes. A lack of personal engagement. That's very, very good. Somebody else, a volunteer. Yeah. I shouldn't have said anything about this presentation, should I? Information with no purpose. Do you watch CNN headline news? Try this. Somebody else. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Or if no one can type it, that's the other hard part. I'm going to make this bigger in a second. Good. Lack of imagination. What was the second one? Did you ever read the Twilight books by Stephanie Meyer? No. You know, Stephen King thinks she can't write. He's never criticized anybody in his life. It's pretty amazing. We have to move on, but I think this is very, very useful because what you've just described is, first of all, a lot of our information environment, and if you think about the act of telling a story, when you're trying to tell a story, a joke or an event or a political situation, you're kind of pushing off from all of these. You're pushing off from silence. You're trying to make sure someone's listening. You hope. I mean, you're trying to engage them personally. You can keep going on and cycling this through and finding a few different ways. By the way, one of the ways I do this exercise is to have people answer this in a wiki in small groups. Then they have to pass the wiki on to the next group, who then edits them and corrects them, and they lose control. It's a lot of fun. Storytelling before Web 2.0 happened. You might not have thought of this as such, but it's worth thinking about. Because one of the geniuses of the term Web 2.0 is it makes you think back to a decade of the web and think about what happened there. So what was going on? There was a lot of storytelling using hypertext. In fact, in the 1980s, there was a company founded to help people tell stories of hypertext called StorySpace. You Mac users, of course, are all familiar with the great hypertext authoring tool called? Mac users are great, you know, they could do. Yes, HyperCard. A lot of these were browser-based. A lot of these connected with offline materials, such as books or even physical toys. Let me show you a few examples. This is a British project called Dreaming Methods. It's Flash-based. It does an interactive, multilinear story in Flash, more or less about contemporary British life. It's a little grim, beautifully told, a nice use of multimedia, including sound and messing with the browser itself. Unlike Web 2.0, you can't interact with it besides picking your way through it. You can't submit comments or anything else, for example. Here's another. GeoCities just died, but you recognize this kind of page. This is a mock urban legend called Ted's Caving Journal. Has anyone here read this? Is anyone here claustrophobic? Close your ears for a second. This pauses to be a person's journal about their caveman exploration and how they find a mysterious cave. And it's really interesting, but it has these mysterious sounds. And as they go further in, it gets a little scary. And then they say, well, we'll find the end of it now. We know we're going to solve all the mystery. Click next, and there's a 404. Ooh, what happens next? But it's very typical Web 1.0. I mean, there's no one original site that anyone can find. It's copied everywhere. It's hosted by Angel Fire, by GeoCities. The design is clumpy. You know, we're all used to that by now. Now, there's also more popular forms. The urban legend, the email chain letter, might be the most popular form of storytelling on Earth in the past decade. We've all seen tons of these. And in fact, they're so popular that you can parody them. So the Nigerian email scam is so popular that you can even do things like, "Dear American, I need to ask you to support an urgent secret business relationship with a transfer of funds of great magnitude. I am the Ministry of the Treasury of the Republic of America. My country has had crisis that has caused the need for a large transfer of funds of $800 billion. You know, this is fiction, of course. More powerfully, when you hear the term digital storytelling, imagine that's trademarked or that it's extra capitalized or has some kind of glow to it, because the term really narrowly refers to a specific pedagogy developed by the Center for Digital Storytelling in Berkeley. That is a pedagogy for getting any user, regardless of their technological skill or confidence, to produce a digital video. The pedagogy is a curriculum that takes 3 days, and users end up with a roughly 3-minute long digital video. I can get into the hardware and the software of this later on during questions if you like, if you haven't done this. It's extremely powerful. There's been a large movement that has spilled out from this in multiple countries, including Italy, Britain, Australia, even Boston. And it has a very, very large scale impact on education in a kind of early adopter fashion. There are digital storytelling projects, assessment methods, protocols across the United States. This is just one example of where we can find, this is actually from last year's EDUCAUSE conference, where you can find an example of assessment tools along with curricular ideas from one campus. Web 2.0 storytelling might be a new concept for you right now in this room, but it's already being done. So for example, you could just click on this delicious tag, Web 2.0 storytelling, and leave. I mean, this is a whole series of examples of these right now. Sometimes Web 2.0 storytelling is based on a specific platform. So for example, a story focuses on a character and uses Twitter or a blog or even MySpace or some form of digital audio to be that character's voice described over time. Sometimes the tools are used to articulate a setting. Now, wikis are especially good for that. Think about the kind of reference world behind Lord of the Rings and how building that kind of background in a wiki can work. Also images, also audio can be used. I mentioned a couple of wonderful free tools for the audio. If you haven't used Mina, it was released a few weeks ago. It's kind of like GarageBand Lite built into Web 2.0. And if you haven't used Freesound, it's a terrific archive hosted by Spanish University of free sounds that you can download and use. Objects are often a key piece of a story. So you think about a mystery, trying to find a hidden object, or an object that a person obsesses over, has as a goal. We've been using Web 2.0 storytelling techniques to delineate objects using images or video. And of course, events. The group in the back mentioned the difference between event and story. Blogs are excellent at articulating this, as are podcasts. We're also beginning to see, I'm going to come back and break these out, don't worry. We're also beginning to see multimodal or multimedia platforms that combine all of these. For example, how many of you here have used VoiceThread? Oh, great. VoiceThread is one of those new technologies like Google Wave or Twitter that didn't have a category except itself. It's very VoiceThready, you know? It's a multimedia thing. It's a wonder, if you haven't used it, there's a great EDUCAUSE 7 things you need to know two-pager about it. But it lets you take an image or a video clip and annotate it very quickly and easily. Digital video continues to get easier and easier. Has anybody here used J-Cut, for example? Oh, great. This is a Web 2.0 simple digital video editing tool that lets you edit a video in a browser quite easily. And gaming, the number of gaming tools that let you build games that are either free or very low cost keeps coming up. Venadio Creo was developed by a couple of students at Rosinas College. Inform 7 is an interactive fiction authoring tool, open source, elegant, beautiful tool. Game Editor, NovaShell, Sandbox, Scare Construct, three of those are free. One of them is pretty low cost. There are a lot of gaming editors out there. Let me step back and hit each of these in a row as we go. And if you think of examples, hold on to them for a minute. Blogs are often mischaracterized as diaries, but we have been using diaries as storytelling techniques ever since we've had diaries. So we have many examples of this. This is a fun one called She's a Flight Risk. Esquire did a report on this where the author claimed to be being in trouble with her husband, who was in organized crime, and how she wanted to leave him, but she wasn't sure and wanted you to give her feedback and comments. It kind of came a gripping adventure story as it went. People have been blogging books as they write them. For example, Siva Vaidhyanathan is blogging his book, The Googleization of Everything. Here's the example of a natural history book that was, each chunk of it came out as a blog, so people could comment and give feedback as it went. People are also republishing books through blogs. For example, the Orwell Diaries were published through a blog. I've been blogging the novel Dracula for about 5 years in a row now. The Thoreau Diaries are up there. The Pepys Diary is the most famous one. But you basically take a book, slice it into chronological content, and publish each one as a blog post. There are people using blogs as creative writing. So for example, a new Spoon River anthology was written by a group of students who use a blog platform to put out individual poems in that. Even if you don't think you're telling a story, as you blog, you're establishing a character. Even if the blog is a group blog, even if the blog looks impersonal and cold, it nevertheless elicits feelings of character identification in people. Steve Himmer has a wonderful line about how readers have to actively engage the process of discovering the author, parsing who is speaking to them and why and where from. And if you don't think that's true, let me refer you to my friend's blog, The Cranky Professor, who is a wonderful historian and art historian, and he does come off as cranky. He's actually a sweetheart. The subtitle is, You Type and I Tell You Why 4,500 Years of Written History Shows You're Wrong. He's not writing fiction, but his character comes out in every paragraph. Now, microblogging. Oh, that reminds me. Let's see. Welcome aboard, Nighthawk. Hello, Ruben. Microblogging is, and the main tool here is Twitter. It really isn't a competitor. Facebook status update is a very different thing in this sense. Microblogging has become an easy tool for telling stories. So for example, it's being used to republish or write stories, just publishing them 140 character at a time bits. It's being used for republishing or rewriting stories or content that is supposed to be short, such as the aphorism. So this artist, Jenny Holzer, has been writing aphorisms and publishing them because they're supposed to be short and pithy. It's kind of natural for Twitter. For creative writing, for round robin creative writing stories, there have been projects where classes have been passing around a Twitter account. And people add them as they go. This is from an eighth grade class? No, sixth grade class. We've been writing this terrifically crazy story, tweet after tweet after tweet. There's also been attempts to republish content that's larger than that. This is a fun one where a 19th century French novel wasn't really a novel. It was excerpts from the Daily News cut down to very, very small bits, and each one constituted a grim little story. Reverend Adieu of Rouen in the Aurillac, whom a pitiless husband perforated Wednesday with two rifle shots, died last night. Complete story. No more briar pipes. Their makers, the Saint Claude, have stopped work until they are paid better. Little story. Fun to read. And of course, Oscar Wilde, which goes with everything, works well on Twitter. The old believe everything, the middle-aged suspect everything, the young know everything. Now for wikis, wikis have been used for storytelling for two or three major purposes. Here's one you may have followed. Penguin Publisher sponsored the Wiki Novel, where they got people to contribute to a novel as it grew. It's an interesting project, because it's not a really good novel, but it did grow over time, and it also forked. There was some wiki editor who was obsessed with bananas, and eventually gave him his own site. And so there's like the banana-crazed novel. You can find this. There's articles about how this worked. You can also use wikis as an adjunct to a story, to build a background or to add extra material. They're really good for group authoring in this sense. There's a real question of can we actually use wikis to tell a compelling narrative? And that's actually a research question right now. So think about that. Is Web 2.0 real? We're researching its minutiae today. Now with images, let me just quick poll of the audience. How many of you have a Flickr account? Hands up. Okay, hands down. How many of you have a Picasa account? Watch that, guys. Google is catching up. Interesting. So if you haven't seen this, when you upload images to Flickr, you can do things with them. So I have a pool, for example, of my baking projects, and you can go there and fear the Atkins nightmare that it is. Or if you want, you can arrange them into a story. So there's a group called Tell a Story in Five Images. And what you do is you take any five pictures, give them a title, arrange them in a sequence, and you're done. You can't add any text. You can't have six pictures. It's like Monty Python, right? The number of the counting must be five. It cannot be four, nor can it be six. It has to be five. No other text. So here's an example. The results are uneven, but they're kind of fun. Here's a fun one. It's called The Chase. Picture one. So remember the Freytag triangle, right? Remember, this is the rising action, right? We've got the birdies and we've got the creature. Oh, the action now! He's after them! Oh, the action kind of continuing, but they're running away! The end. Pretty easy, pretty easy. Now, you could send me those by email, and it would be a story. It works, or you could do them as a PowerPoint presentation. But they're social. They're up there on Flickr, so anybody can comment. People can add things to them. So here, for example, is a little snippet from a stream commenting on another story where one guy suggests reordering images, somebody else suggests the interpretation of them, the author comes out and explains what they're thinking about. Or you can take images that somebody else took and let you use. So this is from the Flickr Creative Commons project. These are a series of images from the Library of Congress color photos collection from the 30s and 40s. And this is from some guy called Eli the Bearded, who is not me. And I don't know who the guy is. And it's called Farm to Food. Now take a look at this. This isn't fiction as such. Image one. I've been trying to make a print of this image because I could just stare at this for weeks at a time. That's a remix of a pre-existing archive. So think about that as a takeaway. If you have digital archives on campus, you all do, this is a pedagogy. You can have students grab them and tell a story. But to do that, they need to understand remixing, they need some visual literacy, they have to make an argument. Calling this From Farm to Food took a little bit of thought. Now, you can do this with slides as well. So for example, in SlideShare, Barbara Ganley did this wonderful slide presentation, which is like a meditation on storm and weather. And that's existing there on SlideShare, so you can play it, you can replay it, you can comment on it, give feedback as it goes, even embed it somewhere else. Now, podcasts. Irony of podcasts. I don't know if you guys remember, when podcasting took off, there's a lot of people who said, this is a great idea, we can tell stories with sound. And all these radio guys are like, yeah, glad you figured that out. We've known about that for a little while. But there's two great ways I want you to take away from here about podcasting. One is you can take pre-existing content and republish it. So if you don't know the great site LibriVox, or if you know Podiobooks or Audible.com, that's what they're doing. They're taking pre-existing text and reading it out loud. So we have that as a very powerful form of interpretation and storytelling. If you don't think it can be done well, I recommend grabbing any one of the Harry Potter books being read by Jim Dale and see how a master does it. Here's the second, doing creative writing through podcasting. Either writing text and publishing it alongside the podcast or just making it here. So the LibriVox team did a whole group podcast story. You might know that in science fiction, fantasy, horror, and mystery, magazine sales have dropped below podcast downloads. And if you want to become a short story author, you're well advised to try and record a podcast version of the story. Already that's changed. Web video is more complicated, more costly in time and sometimes in money. But of course, web video is taking off like crazy. There are many, many examples of storytelling natively aimed at Web 2.0 affordances. Now, for example, this is a kind of fun one, Connect with I. It's about a guy who's finding himself stalked in his apartment by cameras. He finds a camera in his fridge. He finds a camera over his TV. He doesn't know why. And you get to see this and him freaking out. It exists over time, segmented out. People can comment and they're invited to it, which becomes part of the story as it goes. Here's the most famous one. You guys all know Lonely Girl 15? These are a series of webcasts from a girl in high school who's talking about her new school and her friend who's a boy, not a boyfriend, but a friend, and her parents, and how things begin to get interesting. It turned out to be a hoax. She wasn't a teenager. She was in her 20s. It was started off by a bunch of liberal arts college people, always a bad sign. But this became huge. This became enormously popular, and in Web 2.0 fashion. That is, you had these video clips, and then comments, where you could read them and figure out, oh, what's going on with Bree? Is she okay? Where's Benjamin? And then people made videos in response, too. So if you work through YouTube, you can see people saying, Bree, this is Fred, you don't know me, but please be careful of your parents. I don't trust them here. And you could read this back and forth. This unfolded like mad in a very, very different way of telling stories. You can even use MySpace to tell stories, because MySpace is a little flexible when it comes to identity. So for example, the Silver Ladder Project had a whole series of characters who had MySpace pages. If you think of MySpace as about presentation of self, character 101. Now, I'm a little conscious of time, only a little. I'm actually kind of semi-conscious of time. So I'm going to try and proceed a little more quickly and mention that as Web 2.0 grows and we begin to combine a whole series of features into different tools, new storytelling begins to come out. So VoiceThread, for example, lets you take an image and then add things to it. It's a kind of classic story writing prompt, giving somebody a bit of media, letting them add to it. Video. Don't think of video as it being shot from a camera. Instead, think about video as a studio composition tool into which you can chunk multiple media. So for example, this is my 11-year-old, who's doing an elaborate story about Star Wars that I just can't follow, took still photos, shot video, wrote text, recorded narration, added sound, threw all of this into J-Cut pretty easily. That's what you do in digital storytelling in a video sense. You don't just shoot and edit video like Spielberg. You chunk in a whole bunch of multiple media. J-Cut is free. You can try it for now, right now if you want, and see how much the network can stand. But it's a multiple media Web 2.0 storytelling platform, and there will be more. You can also just grab different platforms and throw them together into a story. This is happening more and more frequently. So for example, a British project called We Tell Stories, another Penguin one, had a short story which included Twitter feeds, blogs, a MySpace page, Google Maps, and it worked. Just working through this, you really had a sense of what was going on in this story. Now, I've been emphasizing production, not talking to those who don't want to do any work yet. Let me just touch on consumption for a sec. How you consume one of these stories. By the way, this would be a great exercise. How do you read a story? I mean, this is exercise from English going back to fifth grade. Everyone does this. How do you read a Web 2.0 story? It's important to think about it in a kind of practical way. A lot of these are web content. So you read them in a web page, in a web browser. Even Internet Explorer, you can do that. And you think about what's in there. There's multiple pieces of content. The visual is often pretty strong. But you can break down a website in different ways. So when I teach classes on Web 2.0 storytelling with blogs, people often pull apart a blog. Some dive into the archive, reading it backwards. Some focus on the about page. Others follow links to that blog. You can work through all of those. It doesn't have to be in a browser or a laptop. Web 2.0 storytelling content can be read or consumed almost anywhere. MP3 players for podcasts, game players, ebook readers, for example, on the Kindle if you like, and of course, on phones. And then as you read them, you want to think about the social connections, the social affordances, comments, links from other services, links to other content. So for example, this has got to be hard to read. Is this fuzzy? What you're looking at, wave my hand. This is Google Reader, or RSS Reader. I'm looking right now at the most recent couple of entries from a blog that reblogs Henry David Thoreau's journals. So it's right here in the RSS Reader. So everything you know about RSS fits into here. I can plug this into any other category. I can put this into a class category, a content category, a geographic category, whatever I like. And I can export this, and of course with RSS, if that snippet isn't enough, I click on it, I'm taking away the whole thing. So your RSS reader, which can do many things, is one way for you to consume stories. Here's another one, with podcasts. If you don't know the Memory Palace, you really should. This is a very well done podcast. Let me give you a little sample of this. Listen. Let me actually click on the podcast itself.
This is the Memory Palace.
I'm Nate DeMeo.
Close your eyes as you listen to this, just for a second.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMayo. The man awoke with a start and threw up. He could barely see. It was just before dawn. He smelled something strange and sweet in the air there in his bedroom. He turned to his wife and asked her to run to the kitchen and make sure that the pilot light in the stove was still on, that there wasn't a gas leak. She went to get up, but found that her legs no longer worked.
In case you're wondering, this is actually a true story about a fabulous crime spree that was probably an act of mass hysteria, about a roving gas sprayer. This is fabulous stuff. But think about that. What did you hear that was story-like or story-licious about that? Listen to the beginning of it. Listen.
This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMayo. The man awoke with a start.
What does that do to engage you? Anybody? It does. How? Mysterious? Yeah, what was it? Did you hear the glissando of the harp in the background? And it plunges right in. Also his tone of voice.
And threw up. He could barely see. It was just before dawn. He smelled something strange and sweet in the air there in his bedroom. He turned.
You know this presenter's trick of lowering your voice so that people have to lean forward? And if you talk really quietly, it always works. But he does this. This is only about 3 minutes long. It's called the Memory Palace. And there are a bunch of these. They're all based on just interesting stories from history. So consume it, play it in a browser, put it on your MP3 player, listen to it from a speaker, an overhead projector, whatever you like. One more example. There's a project from Occidental College in California to take the poetry of Robinson Jeffers and republish it through Twitter. This sounds goofy, but it actually works really well. For example, I don't know if you can see this. You see on the left edge a tower? Twitter gives you a background image. This is not accidental. This is a tower the poet made with his own hands as an aesthetic project, all made out of stone. Individual Twitter tweets focus your attention down to that little 140 character or fewer limit, which is the kind of attention you need to pay for poetry. This is often hyperlinked out so you can get more of these as you go. It's a way of celebrating Jeffers, but also of reading him. Now, why you would do all of this, a bonus reason, is that Web 2.0 tends to be playful. It's often game-like. In fact, some of these act like massively multiplayer online games, just very inexpensive, low cost, and low graphics quality. They're often very portable. They're often very playful. So you think about the bonuses you get in learning from play. They're engaged here. For example, they're retweeting this time. Taking the War of the Worlds and doing it through Twitter, which is a lot of fun. Oh, it sounds goofy. Next thing you know, they'll do it by radio. Right. It's a lot of fun to follow this. They had individual people pretending like, you know, Martian cylinders were landing and war machines were coming out. It's a lot of fun to read. It is fun and playful, but actually it's pretty engaging. You can do this for multiple topics. There are risks involved. Losing control of the story. So anyone who's ever posted a video to YouTube and gotten comments you didn't like, this is part of Web 2.0. I want to jump to the end of this, give you a few more practical tips, and then take a couple of questions before we run out of time. A couple of tips. Web 2.0 is often serial-based, like a soap opera, like a magazine serial, often segmented in time. So you want to think about how you can break a story up. By the way, the story doesn't have to be fiction. This can be nonfiction. This can be your own work. But if you want someone to follow your podcast about your IT shop or your blog about your class, think about some of these principles. What brings people back? There are a lot of ways of doing it. The great 19th century novelist Wilkie Collins, when asked what his secret was, he said, he takes the audience, he makes them cry, he makes them laugh, he makes them wait. So you think about that duration, how you can engage people and make them hang on for a bit. You can think about a persona that you create. It doesn't have to be you. It can be a part of you, or something that, a role that you're playing, or total fiction. But something that will engage people, that personal connection one of the groups mentioned about half an hour ago. Well, think of ways of making setting work. Maps, wikis, images, all of these can function nicely. Now, if you want to take content and break it up over time, there are a few different tips you can do. One is, in the introduction layer, you can introduce where you are or reintroduce it, or leave it out and plunge people right in. You can recap where a story is, or have a separate page for that. You can also cut in some interesting places. Sometimes we like to cut at the end of a well-rounded paragraph, let people take that away. Sometimes we like to cut right in the, and people like to follow up and see what's going on. The sequence doesn't have to be linear. So for example, the Dracula blog, we take the novel. The novel is fairly linear, but you can also take that and do flashbacks back in time or flash forward. An extreme example would be the TV series Lost, which does both flashbacks and flash forwards. You can do that as you explore something. You can also, as you leave the content, as you close that blog post, as you end that podcast, as you wrap up your video, you can tie this up and explain what people should look for the next time. You can do that for the most mundane topic, but often audiences will respond. Now, there's a lot of stuff going on feeding into all of this, and it's worth studying. When you think about multimedia, which we've been talking about for a long time, and we're drawing on a lot of multimedia practice in order to make this work. If you ever read a comic strip, that's serial narrative. How those function can work for Web 2.0. You think about serial print culture. Anyone who's ever read, say, a story in a magazine over time. You can think about TV. If we hate talking about soap operas, a lot of us have seen them. Or you've seen Battlestar Galactica, which has the same kind of effect. You want to stay on for the next time. A lot of these things plunge into one vortex. Now, a lot of this, what I'm saying now, will change in the far future, like say, summer of next year. So let me give you a few emergent pointers, and let's take some questions. One is that we're already seeing stories about Web 2.0 storytelling. It plays roles. Blogs show up in TV shows and in novels. People are already using future blogs to describe events that happen. We're already using Facebook storytelling as a humor source. So I opened with the end of Titus Andronicus by Facebook. Here's an example of the Jane Austen story as Facebook. Charles Bingley is buying a house. Mrs. Bennet became a fan of Charles Bingley. Kitty Bennet can't stop coughing. And you could go on forever. There's a Hamlet like this. There are Bible stories like this. It's pretty easy to do. But the fact that it works for anybody tells you that we're looking at a form that's already at work. There are a lot of problems we can talk about. We could talk about copyright if you want to be depressed. We could talk about, as well, some of the practices that are being used to avoid copyright problems. That's pretty typical. Anything that happens with Web 2.0 and copyright more or less applies here. We could think of mobile devices and think that some of these content chunks are small, perhaps well-suited to the cell phone, maybe better suited to the MP3 player or the cell phone than to a web browser. This might be the mobile storytelling way. Now, there's a federal regulation in the United States which says that all PowerPoint presentations have to end with URLs. I don't know if you're aware of that, but in compliance with that statute, we do have some links. My good friend Alan Levine and I have done some work on this, and we have a Wikispaces page for this. We also have a Delicious tag that has, I don't know, 70 or 80 examples right away. We published an article that's online. There may be a couple print copies behind those guys who thought they were safe in the back, but it's too late, I'm pointing at them. There may be some there. It's also probably available at the EDUCAUSE Pit. And if you want to talk to me or stalk me or wonder what the hell I'm doing, I'm on Twitter, of course, that blog, Liberal Education Tomorrow, has examples of Web 2.0 storytelling every week. And if you ask anybody, are there any questions, the problem is that tends to kill any desire to ask questions. So instead of doing that, let me ask you where you've seen any of this stuff on your campus or in your life. Web 2.0 stories. Anybody? Wait, pause for a second. The EDUCAUSE authorities told me that we're recording my presentation. They're not recording you because the mic is right here. So they asked me to repeat the question. And you have a very compelling, but because of the acoustics of the room, fairly quiet voice. So I'm going to repeat it here. You're teaching class in continuing education? Can you guys all hear that? He has the students do podcasts about color, which is wonderful. This is a great multimedia pedagogy where you have people do against type. At Middlebury College, there was a teacher who had the students who are excellent writers do multimedia narrative without any text. Drove them bonkers. They didn't know what to do. They were so used to it. And so they did images and sound. And when they were done, they went back to text. They felt confused. They had to look at it through new eyes, which really helped them. What a great example. Excellent. Another example. Stop. Who are you and where are you from?
I'm at Lone Star College.
So you have these middle school students doing images and then remixing based on the old tradition of fairy. Oh, fabulous. I would love to see this work. If you guys have time when we're done, I would love to see a pointer to that. Great. Where else are you guys seeing this? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't see it, please. So can you guys all hear that? So having foreign language classes have students create multimedia narratives in the language they're learning. So it's the classic pedagogy of language where you have to perform the language, you have to speak it, but they also have to tell stories with that. So they really, it's a great, in many ways, a perfectly accessible project where, you know, we can assess how they did, but doing that in foreign languages. How awesome, great. Two more examples, if anyone has one. Oh, yes, ma'am. Now, do you get to train them in all the technical details of this?
No.
Excellent. These are business students?
What's that?
These are business students? Are they mostly traditional age, say 20 to 24? Yeah, it is. That personal connection that someone mentioned about an hour ago really, really works. Great. My clock says 11:20, and I'm compelled, against the liberal arts tradition, to end on time. So let me thank you all for coming. If you would like to learn more, again, we have all these URLs that you can follow. You can go to our website. There may still be business cards lying around the back. I have a few more in the front, and I'd love to talk with you afterwards. Thank you all for your time. Thank you.